this summer.
I think there's a list. It's like, well, you're joking. You're joking. But there's actually not a big list this time. It's a list that's suitable for just being you and me this week. Okay.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. All right. And you know what? You know what? So here's what we get. We get sorry.
Amelia Earhart's plane may have been found.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, so the joke, of course,
is Francisco Franco is still dead.
Francisco Franco is still dead. Amelia Earhart has been found again. Have you seen this story? This is bizarre. I don't know what to make of it. How many times have we seen this story? Right. How many times in the life of this podcast, 17 years, think about that, 17 years, have we come across a report that somebody thinks they found Amelia Earhart's airplane or signs of where they survived and died or whatever? But here we go. Here we go again. Yeah. Robotics firm confident Amelia Earhart's plane found. And this is actually a story that was hot a couple weeks ago. It's been sitting on our list waiting for it just to be you and me talking. Here the moment has come. It's actually only late January, 29th. South Carolina Marine Robotics Company seems pretty sure. See, why do they write this? Russ Niles, God bless Russ Niles, but come on, Russ. He's drinking the Kool-Aid here. Yeah. Seems pretty sure it's found Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan's Lockheed Electra in an area not... So what they've got is they've got some sort of sonar radar-ish kind of return image that sort of looks like the shape of the right kind of airplane, you know? On the other hand, I could write a story that said, I just saw a bunny in the sky, all right? You know, I saw a cloud that looked like a lion. I'm sure there's a lion in the sky, all right? It's like, you look at enough of these kinds of images, and you're going to see Amelia Earhart's airplane eventually.
You're going to see everything you ever wanted to
see. Yeah. So I don't know what to make of this. I guess it would be, apparently, if this were to be it, I think I read, I'm scanning this story here. I seem to remember that it's in pretty deep water.
That's what I'm looking for here too.
This one doesn't
say. The AgWeb story doesn't say anything. And I'm looking at the organization's website. Well, I'm sorry, this is PR Newswire, but it's a press release provided by the people searching for this.
Yeah.
The people responsible for this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're looking. That was me reacting to dead air. Somebody had to go, or something.
Yeah. But I'm not seeing any official word here about how deep this water is.
Yeah.
How deep they have to go. And I'm kind of thinking that they don't have the equipment to go that deep.
Well, that may be the issue, right?
Or to go that deep and come back, as we've recently seen.
Yeah, once.
We could go that deep once, but...
Once. Yeah. 2024, I guess, this is USA Today. Do they have a depth here? Hang on. It appears to be a plane on the seafloor, 100 miles from the Howland Islands. Lots of graphics. 16,000 feet deep.
Huh.
Okay. Deeper than the Titanic. That's just according to USA Today story.
Yeah, that means Navy, U.S. Navy stuff.
And do they care?
If you talk to them, right, it's a nice research project.
That's true. You know,
and it's not like the U.S. Navy wasn't involved in searching for her in the immediate aftermath of her going missing.
Right.
They could complete the mission.
Yeah. And what's the line from Alice's Restaurant? You know, they have all that cool cop equipment that they've got to use somehow, some way, and so they're going to produce all kinds of pictures with circles and arrows.
A stack of 8x10 color glossy photographs with a paragraph on the back of each one.
That's right. And then there'll be
Ossifer,
no problem.
I cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that pile of garbage.
That's right. And we won't have to worry about blind justice not paying attention to the pictures, because if they can get us real pictures of Amelia Earhart's airplane, Amelia Earhart's airplane on the bottom of the ocean, we will look at them.
We will look at them, yes. And some of us will pay real money for pieces of that airplane.
Yeah. I mean, if they do that, it'll probably be declared a... If they recover any of it, they'll be declared a... It's like Titanic's a serious national whatever graveyard or something like that. It's against the law to touch it.
Is it a U.S. graveyard site?
I don't know. I think there's some UK sort of international thing international? These kinds of things get declared. There's a terminology for it, and it's a good thing. I'm glad they do.
Yeah, I'm not.
And likewise, that would be the same here. Not that there's going to be any remains of them. There's going to be physical, stuff.
Fred Noonan Sexton would get real money.
But that's if such a thing were recovered, it would go to a Smithsonian like organization.
Well, I'm sure there's some evil.
Billionaire
that would cough up some money for
well,
that.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So there we go. All right, well, mystery solved. They found Amelia Earhart's airplane, and
again.
They just got to go get it.
They found it again. That could at least send some cameras down there.
We'll see. That would be great. I hope they do. But
I hope they do. Good luck in all that. I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Anyways, on that note, welcome, folks, to Uncontrolled Airspace, the General Aviation Podcast. I'm Jack Hodgson, coming to you from a heat wave in February in New Hampshire. It's like 45 degrees here today. Before Jeb starts laughing, I'm going to say hi to my friend here in the virtual hangar. That's Jeb Burnside. It's just me and Jeb today. We're going to have some fun. Hi, Jeb. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I muted my laughter.
Oh yeah, okay. That's a first. Why? When your concern, your consideration of my feelings is so touching.
As I get older, I'm trying to turn over new leaves.
I don't know why, but okay. As I get older, I care less and less. It's like I'm becoming one of those old guys who just doesn't care anymore. It's like. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. All right. Hi. How you doing? What's going on? You're having fun down there?
I'm sorry. Say again.
I said, are you having fun down there?
I am. Yeah. The weather's finally improving a little bit here. We can go flying a little bit more often without losing our fillings. The winds have actually started to align themselves with the runway. I wrote this up in last month's magazine about how the people who laid out the runway here at Hidden River. They did a study and they found out that half the time the winds are from the north and half the time the winds are from the south. So they laid the runway out east-west.
Yeah,
to split
right.
The difference.
There you go.
And then they planted trees and put some buildings up and that kind of thing alongside the runway. So it just makes it interesting.
Yeah. That's sorry. I gotta cough. I'm gonna mute. Sorry, I'm back. I first heard that joke when Bert Rutan told it about NASA runway. That was back when, anyways. But I like it. It could well apply to your runway for all we know. There used to be
high spot in the county too. That's right.
But on the other hand, there used to be a 90-degree offset runway there, right? Isn't that read someplace in the history of your development that road that you use as a taxiway now, that final approach to the runway, the road, I don't know what that road's called,
we've often joked about that as being runway 1836.
Well, yes, but I thought I have it in clear, not clear, but I have it somewhat clearly fuzzy in my head. I either read something or one of your neighbors who's sort of knowledgeable about the history
That's entirely possible.
This is pre-paved runways. I don't know.
Back in the dark ages.
I guess. Yeah, right.
Before they had airplanes.
Yeah. Well, if it's not a paved runway, it's not a runway. I don't think that's true. I just said it because
it's a landing area.
Some people said it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going into a local airport a couple of weeks ago. And some guy's calling downwind for 14, and there's not a paved runway 14, but there is a grass runway 14.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
I you know, I've never landed on turf. I've never landed off pavement.
Oh, we can fix that.
I've always wanted to. I think it would be kind of cool. And, you know, yeah, so.
Yeah, there's a couple of grass runways around here that would be adequate.
Even yeah.
Debonair.
There's a grass runway. So the Northampton, where we had lunch that time when you were here, lunch or breakfast.
It's got that grass runway next door to the pavement.
So, but until about, I don't know what, 5 or 8 years ago, it was just unpaved. They didn't have a paved runway there. The runway, there's only one runway, or two, depending on how you count them. But, for forever, it was a grass runway, which was really just barely grass. It was like one of the annual spring things that they did at Northampton Field is that all the airport people would get together and they'd do they'd walk the runway to pick up rocks because you know, rocks will, I don't know, it probably happens everywhere, but it certainly happens here in New Hampshire, is that rocks come to the surface on any terrain that's kind of being pounded on by vehicles.
Well, that and there's ice.
And the ice helps it as well. And so so basically they had a name for it. It was like the rock walk or the gravel pickup. I don't remember what they called it. But yeah, every spring this would be one of the things that would happen. Because it was just a grass/turf/gravel runway. And then I was shocked about whatever it was, it was before the pandemic. So it had to be like 5 or 8 or 10 years ago. It was a long time, but whenever it was, I was surprised one time to suddenly see a report about how they were about to pave the runway. And I was thinking, wow. So, I mean, it's like, because it really impressed me that anybody figured out how to get that approved.
Yes.
In our day and age. All right.
Yes.
You know, and especially this is a small airport, kind of hemmed in by development and roads and stuff. It's a poster child for an airport that the community might not like under different circumstances.
Sure.
But somebody managed to get it approved and they added the paved runway, but then they left grass. Enough grass along one side so that, because they got a lot of they still do, I think, a lot of tail dragger activity there. And those folks like that kind of stuff. And so.
Well, you know, and look at it this way too. If they do close the airport and let it all revert back to a residential area, that's going to be a residential area with its own drag strip.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if it's long enough to be a drag strip, but yeah. See, maybe that was the ulterior motive. So let's let them pave it, and then we'll shut them down, and we'll have a drag strip.
Yeah.
You know, because, no, that would never happen. Because, you know, community people are never have sinister motives when it comes to airports.
And they're never selfish about these things.
Exactly. They're always.
Yeah. And they always, they never think strategically.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Well. That's another question altogether. Do you know what I'm alluding to here? There's actually a story on the list, I think.
Yes, yeah, probably G100 or unleaded avgas.
No, really? It is unleaded-ish. Story. Hang on, where'd the list go?
Oh, airport lead exposure study kept under wraps?
Yeah. And I don't think
why don't we just jump right into that?
Yeah, I think this is not the first time I've heard this kind of story happening. This may have happened. I don't want to speak out of school, but it might have happened at Reed Hillview in California.
Uh-huh.
But I think I've heard this story before of the folks in this particular area don't like the airport, so they order up a lead study expecting that it will show unsafe levels of lead. And I'm making finger quotes for unsafe because they're usually really small, if technically unsafe. In this particular case, where's the story go? Here it's
Superior, Colorado.
Yeah. So this is another AbWeb story. This is by Mark Phelps. A series of studies commissioned by the town of Superior, Colorado, found virtually no evidence of airborne and surface lead contamination in three towns nearby Jefferson County's Rocky Mountain Metro Airport. But it took a Freedom of Information Act request to get the test results made public. That last part I was paraphrasing.
Yes.
But Yeah, they apparently went out of their way to keep it secret. When the study came back, no lead found, no dangerous lead found. They hid the study. I guess it's America in the early 21st century, I guess. I don't know. But so that is what it is. It maybe is a lead-in to the if possible, the unleaded avgas story got a little more interesting in the past couple weeks.
Yes.
I don't know how to summarize it exactly, except to say that the parts of it that are on my radar, and maybe you have a different perspective of it, the parts that are on my radar are sometime in the recent past, some environmental group in California went public with a statement that made it seem like they thought that now... I'm sorry, I'm going to back up a step, okay? Another story was that Gammy's Fuel now officially has a refiner, all right? Uh-huh. They have a company that is making the fuel in quantity, and they're ramping up production, and sometime in the coming summer, we're going to see, G100UL? Is that what they call it?
Uh-huh.
In quantity. Probably in California first. Okay, so now this news hits that there's going to be unleaded gas in California. Now the environmental group comes forward and puts out some press release or wrote a letter or whatever it was that made it seem like they were saying that now that there is a good unleaded alternative, all of the airports in California must stop selling leaded gas.
Okay. Yeah, that was wishful thinking.
Yeah. And so that was a story kind of a couple weeks ago. And then like a week ago, that same environmental group came forward and said, time out. We didn't, you know, and I guess they were trying, I don't know whether they meant to say that in the first place and then realized they can't say that or whether they didn't mean to say that at all. But now they've come back and said, no. We're not saying that they can't sell low lead gas. We're saying that they have to sell the unleaded gas. They can choose to continue selling low lead if they want. Okay, and I've seen a couple of different people, Gammy included, I think, agreeing with that interpretation of the legal thing. What was it? The settlement that happened a bunch of years ago. So, anyways, that's the thing. So, good news. Gammy's got a producer.
Well, there's a couple of. Just to put things in context here.
Yeah.
There's a February 19 story on AvLab. Headline, California FBOs told to start selling G100UL when it's commercially available, quote unquote. And that's what kind of got this ball rolling down the hill. It's thanks to, according to the story, and this is Russ Niles again, thanks to a 9-year-old court ruling. Consent judgment issued in 2014 says that as soon as there's an approved commercially available replacement for 100 low lead, quote, FBOs have to sell it, I guess. There's a typo here. Allowed to continue to sell 100 low lead, will also have to stock unleaded fuel. Gammy disagrees with that interpretation, says the FBOs will be compelled to sell only its fuel or another fuel that has no lead in it. Council on Environmental Health, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Center for Environmental Health, have sent notice to all California FBOs to stock G100UL as soon as it becomes commercially available to them. If they don't, they can be found in contempt and face heavy fines. Now, again, that's on February 17. Fast forward to February 21, and the story, again by Russ, lawyer for California Environmental Group says a court settlement that will mandate the sale of G100UL avgas will not necessarily prevent FBOs from also selling 100 low lead. This is Mark Todzo, who represents the Center for Environmental Health.
Right.
Clarified part of it. Let's see. He's also talking about George Brawley, who's been on the podcast to talk about this very topic.
Yes, he did.
His reading of the consent agreement is that it compels the businesses and distributors to sell the fuel with the lowest lead content available. He said it says nothing about them able to sell anything else.
Right.
Regardless of the legal semantics, Brawley said practical considerations will exclude 100 Little Red from most airports in the state because they only have one gasoline tank and pump and da-da-da-da-da. All of this is to say that the situation is just as confounding and confusing as it has been over the last couple of years.
Well, okay, it's still confusing, but I don't think it's as confusing. I think it's starting to settle out here. The fact that Nate now, Brawley, when he was on our podcast last summer, whenever it was, alluded to the fact that they sort of had a refiner lined up. And I want to ask mm-hmm. him whether or not that the refiner he was referring to back then is this Vitol. Uh-huh. But whatever. He alluded to the fact that they were trying to find a refiner and they hadn't yet found it or, kind of done a deal. But it's a good thing now that they've gone public now. They've said, and this Vitol apparently has also gone public. I mean, everybody agrees this is getting ramped up now. They're going to be able to produce this stuff in quantity and make it available initially to places they can make it available to. Apparently it's going to be California first, so that's good. That's progress. That's a good thing. The question of whether or not it is going to be chaotic at first, all right? Just like it was when we went to unleaded fuel for cars.
Sure.
All right? Many people, sadly, a lot of people who are adults these days were not around or not old enough to be aware of it. But we went through this with cars whenever it was, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Holy moly, when was it?
It's been longer than that. 70s.
Yeah, it was probably the 70s or 80s.
70s,
yeah.
70s and 80s.
Yeah. Oh, God, we're old, Jeb. We're just so old.
Stop. Just stop.
But it was crazy back then because there was a period of time where, first of all, some people started to have cars that had to have unleaded gas. And then we had places that were selling both. And then it was a little bit chaotic. And it's going to be chaotic for airplanes, too. There's just no two ways around it, because even though this fuel is going to become increasingly available, there are going to be a lot of airplane operators who either can't or choose not to use this fuel. They're going to have to figure out where to get low lead. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be some marketplace motivation to still have low lead available. And it's going to be a little bit crazy for a while.
Well, it is. And there's also Swift is not down and out of this either.
No.
There's their 94 UL, which is great for engines that can run on 80 or 90 octane. And don't require 100 or 100 low lead or 100 UL or whatever, a flavor of 100 octane nav gas. They'll have options too. There might be, may or may not be a Swift fuel at a neighboring airport. It's unlikely that there will be two or three kinds of fuel being dispensed at any given airport.
Agreed.
ForeFlight may have to add another field to their database. Yes, we have fuel. Yes, we have 100. Oh, yeah, we have 94 UL and G100 UL also.
Yeah.
Who knows?
No, it's exactly going to be that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, and ultimately it's a good thing. It is good that I personally think that the low lead, that the lead in the environment impact of our airplanes is not that significant, all right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it is something, and it's better if it's gone.
Yeah.
So that it's good that we're going in this direction.
Absolutely.
But we're going in a weird – it's going to be a weird time.
You live in interesting times.
Yeah, exactly right. So
another thing going on here too is – and I don't think we've talked about this before – AOPA and GAMI. I believe GAMI had to have some piece of this.
Yeah.
Have collaborated and put together a project where they're running a Beach Baron.
I saw that story. Yeah, tell me.
They're running 100 low lead on one side of the Baron, and they're running G100 UL on the other side mm-hmm. of the Baron. And there's a video on AvWeb. Friend of the podcast, Rick Durden, has flown this airplane and reports that the big surprise is there's no surprise.
Yeah. Well, not simply no surprise. I think the quote I saw, and I don't have the story in front of me, but didn't the story say that the only difference between the two was that the Gammy fuel ran better?
Yeah, it's got more BTUs, and you know, it supposedly puts out has more energy.
Yeah.
And when you burn it right, it puts out a little bit more power. But that's kind of negligible.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can maybe feel it in the seat of your pants or in your hopium bag. But
apparently it'll be better on the plugs too, right? You should
well,
see.
There's
it.
No lead.
Yeah. So there's
that.
No
lead, so there's that.
It is more expensive.
Everything's more expensive.
Yeah, well, that's true. But, you know, it is going to be more expensive. As you know, yeah, so there is that.
And well, we know that, too, that the products that go into G100UL are priced based on, you know, current demand. If that demand starts to ramp up, A, those prices
sure.
might go higher.
Yeah.
B, if those constituent products can be made in greater quantity for less money, who knows? The price could come down.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah. So
and I'm not a petrochemical engineer, so, you know. But here we go.
Yeah. So there we go. So,
Anyway, I haven't bought my STC yet because... it's I'm in Florida it's going to like the last place on earth that is going to get G100 UL.
And chances are, oh no, I was
the governor will be standing at the state line with an axe. Okay?
That's what I was going. That's the joke I was going to make.
Yeah, exactly.
But I won't because this is not a political podcast.
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, anyways, cool progress, but. A little bit, yet another flavor of confusion. And
one step forward, one step sideways.
There you go. So, anyways. Not much more. Listen, one thing I definitely want to talk about, though, is Sun and Fun's coming up here.
Sun and Fun's coming up.
Yeah. It's as we record this, it's about, what, 6 weeks from now,
I think I'm ginning up a piece on air show arrivals for the next issue of the magazine.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to Sun and Fun. Sun and Fun is a little bit complicated for me and I guess for you too this year because the big eclipse happens like the day before Sun and Fun starts. And
the eclipse we're talking about is not a small jet.
Yeah, no, right. Yeah, this is where, this is the whole moon-sun thing. And it's a significant eclipse going across a large part of the United States, including very, very close to where I live up here in the Northeast. And so when I tumbled, I was like sad. I knew the eclipse was coming and I knew Sun and Fun were coming and I didn't put the two together until about a month or 2 months ago. And I suddenly realized that the eclipse is the day before Sun and Fun starts. And normally I'm in Florida by then, well by then, you know, if not on the Sun and Fun grounds. But the eclipse is going to be nowhere near Florida. So I thought about it for a while. I said, no, I can't miss this eclipse. This is going to be the last big eclipse, you know, forever, for a long time. So I decided I was going to stay in New England for the eclipse. And then the moment the eclipse has passed, I'm gonna make tracks somehow, some way for Florida and arrive at Sun and Fun like a day or so late. Sorry about that, sad about that because I love Sun and Fun and
especially we all especially like getting there early.
Yeah, well, I mean, different people have different, you know, like some people like to go to the beginning, some people like to go to the end. Last year I went to Sun and Fun. For the first time in many years, I spent the entire week at Sun and Fun. All right, I just decided I wanted to be there all week long for a variety of reasons, not the least of which I kind of felt like our dear friend Dave couldn't be there. I wanted to be there. All right, so I spent the whole week at Sun and Fun a year ago, and I had a blast. I enjoyed Sun and Fun about as much as I have enjoyed it in many, many years. It was just a terrific experience. Seeing all my friends, hanging out with the radio station people, seeing the show, the whole thing. It was great. And so I was looking forward to it, going back. I'm going to go back again this year. But wait a minute, it's the eclipse. So I'm going to miss the first couple of days. But I'll be there probably late-ish sometime. And by the end of day Wednesday, which is day 2 of Sun and Fun, I will have arrived, having been eclipsed, having been, having received my, there's a word in there that I'm going to invent, but
sporting a moon tan.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That could be it. That could be it. Yeah.
Apologies to Golden Earring.
Yeah. So, but so anyways, I'm arriving a little late, but otherwise Sun and Fun's coming is going to be great. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff. Like I said, I'll arrive late by Wednesday. Wednesday night is the, this is the way they do it. I think Wednesday night is the first of the night air shows. And that's always a lot of fun.
It's a shame we don't have some device.
I know. Right. And then I'll be there for the rest of the week. Uncontrolled Airspace will be at Sun and Fun as well.
We will.
Yes, we will.
Outstanding. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I know, right? What we're going to do is we're going to do some dailies while we're there. Those will kind of be spur of the moment things depending on who we're talking to and who we meet up each day. But we'll do some dailies. And then on Saturday afternoon, day before the last day, Saturday afternoon, we will do a full-blown hour episode of Uncontrolled Airspace from the deck of the Sun and Fun radio station.
I should put that on my calendar.
You better. And the real reason you should put it on your calendar is that we are combining that. So we're going to do it. This will take place in between the two air shows because there's a night air show on Saturday as well. So there's the day air show, and the day air show ends five-ish, something like that, I'm told. Okay. So when the day air show is over and the radio station comes back online after the air show, it will be us, right? Go figure. They continue to make this mistake year after year.
We keep mentioning this and discussing it in advance, and they still bounce it back.
But we're gonna gather on their deck, you and me and other friends, and we're gonna do an episode of the podcast, and we're gonna have a good old time talking about Sun and Fun. But that's not all right?
Because there's more.
Immediately following the episode that we do, actually probably beginning while we're doing it, is going to be the first. What I hope will be the so we've been kind of experimenting with doing a tie down type party at Sun and Fun, and we haven't quite found the right vibe yet. So this is the latest iteration. This is the latest attempt, and that is we're going to call it the after party. All right, it's going to be there on the Sun and Fun radio deck. Immediately after we do the live episode, they're on the deck, and we will have some beverages, both adult beverages and soft beverages, and some cheesy poofs. And we invite all of our friends and listeners who are at Sun and Fun to come by and hang out with us while you're waiting for the night air show to happen. All right, because we'll be there on the deck. So anyways, I'm kind of having fun with this, but this is the kind of to summarize Uncontrolled Airspace. Saturday afternoon during Sun and Fun week. They tell me 5:15-ish is what to expect, but whenever the air show ends, that's when we'll start the episode.
The daytime episode ends.
You can come by and watch. You can come up on the deck and certainly watch and maybe even get dragged into the whole thing while we're doing the episode. And then sometime during that period of that hour, we will kick off. We'll start cracking open the beers, and the after party will begin. And when we finish doing the episode, we will continue to visit and have a good old time with our friends and listeners and who are also friends, and it'll be great.
Yeah.
Saturday evening. Late afternoon at Sun and Fun 2024. It's going to be cool.
Yeah. Be there, be square.
Be there, be square. Or be square.
Or be square.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Could go either way. What else? Is there anything? I haven't really tuned in to what's happening at Sun and Fun this year that might be outstanding.
It's the 50th.
Oh, that's right. There is that. Very, very cool thing. Yeah, good for them. Almost as old as this podcast. Or the other way around.
Almost. He's doing a lot of work there.
We're at 17 years on this podcast now, and someone the other day said, so what's the second 17 years going to be like? I was going to you.
Quiet. My first reaction, but yeah. So let's see. Sun and Fun has a website. How about that? So let's see. There's all kinds of, building with composites, career fairs, metal shaping techniques, safety wiring, MIG welding, TIG welding. I would say the standard Sun and Fun fair, but there's always something different. Here's Here's a flying beach airplane safely and efficiently. I probably ought to try to attend that. Why start now? Yeah. So right.
Yeah. Here we go. Air show. What do we got here? So this is, again, I'm also looking at that website. I'm looking at a different page than you.
You're looking at a different page.
Thunderbirds.
Thunderbirds.
The U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds are going to be there. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the standard F-18, F-35 demonstrations, a lot of the usual suspect airshow folks are going to be there. I don't want to start naming them because I'll miss the good ones, and people will send me mail. But the Ghost Squadron, which is another jet squadron, I believe it's a private jet squadron, but I'm pretty sure I've seen them before, and that's pretty cool. Let's see now here.
So,
An activity called Tora Tora Tora, which one would presume is well, see, I don't know about Tora Tora Tora. Anyways, it's another warbirds kind of flyby kind of activity. So there's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff. And the night air show, which I know is Saturday night, and I'm pretty sure is Wednesday night. There'll be another. I'm pretty sure we have one more. We have at least one more, maybe two more episodes before Sun and Fun. So we'll talk some more about this.
Yeah, there's a night air show. Let's see. The F-35 demo team will be part of that. The Patriot parachute team will be part of that.
Yeah.
Tora Bomb Squad is pyrotechnics.
Lights in the cowlings. Lights in the cowlings.
Lights in the cowlings. The shell, aeroshell team.
Hey, be careful! I think they changed their name. I think I heard someplace that they changed their name.
You're right.
Yeah. But whoever their title sponsor is now, those folks are cool. And
let's see. Titan aerobatic team.
Is that what it's called now?
Four T6s.
That sounds right. Yeah. Yeah.
Titan.
But that's lights in the cowlings.
Lights in the cowlings.
And they're apparently doubling down on the future flight plaza. They're in the process right now, and I don't know whether this is very. I don't have any inside information, so I'm not like speaking out of school here. But it's pretty obvious that they're in the process of kind of evolving the facility, the grounds, and it feels like they're moving it in a certain direction to kind of take advantage of some unused space. And one of the things they did last year was this. I think it's the Future in Flight Plaza. It was called the Island, I think, last year or something like that. There's just a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Sun and fun.
And for those of you that are looking at sub-zero temperatures right now, where you are, there's a reason it's called Sun and Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be nice. It's going to be nice.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice. Yeah. Anyways. All right. I've babbled on enough about this. Anything else you want to mention about Sun and Fun? Or
no, just that it's the closest air show to where I live. Closest big air show to where I live. And I will be there at some point.
Yeah.
The gods of beach aircraft and Continental Motors notwithstanding.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Is there news about 737 MAXs? I know it is. The preliminary NTSB thing came out.
Preliminary NTSB report is out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. Only God knows, you know, how far along they'll be, you know, when we get around to that point. But I'm not making any bad jokes here either.
I get it.
Is it changing? It's an evolving thing. But there is a preliminary report. It's multiple pages. There's, you know, a bunch of material in there. The bottom line that they've figured out so far is that to repair some rivets on the final assembly floor, the door, the offending door, the door that blew out, was removed to enhance access to those rivets. The rivets were repaired. The door was, quote, reinstalled, unquote.
Yep.
The NTSB found no bolts where there should be bolts.
Yep.
The NTSB says it is still pawing through the manufacturing records at Boeing to try to figure out where in the process the bolts were not installed, but the work was signed off as complete. And that will be an interesting interesting discussion.
Yeah. Now, maybe related, maybe not related, the person in charge at Boeing of the, 737 or the 737 MAX program left the company this past week.
Yeah, he or she is gone.
I believe it's a he,
it's a he also.
I forget this guy's name, but, I think the big presumption is that this is related, but I don't know.
Well, I think, hang on a second. Okay, this is Reuters. Boeing 737 MAX program head out at Playmaker. Boeing said on Wednesday, which is yesterday, replacing the head of its troubled 737 MAX program, effective immediately. Ed Clark, who had been with the Playmaker for nearly 18 years, departed as Boeing has been dealing with its latest crisis and has vowed to bolster quality efforts. Katie Ringgold is replacing him as vice president and general manager of the 737 program, according to a memo seen by Reuters, sent to staff by Boeing Commercial Airplane CEO Stan Deal. Yeah. So there's two takeaways from this. He's gone. He has been replaced or is being replaced. And the headline, of course, says Boeing 737 MAX program head. But given that there aren't any new non-MAX 737s, he's basically the type's, he or she now, is basically the type's lead. While the program head who's departing over the years has had, I'm sure, responsibilities for the entire 737 fleet. They're only making the MAXs now, and that makes, that kind of answers your question.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also digging around through some of the reports on this. I'm trying to find out if Boeing has stated the reason for his leaving. I'd be interested to know what wording they used. Well, I'd like to know what Boeing's official statement is. Because it may well characterize it, and it's kind of like it's time for a change. He decided to retire. So listen. For all we know, this guy did a good job as could be done under the circumstances, all right? But he's in the center. He's been in the middle of a tornado for, months now, all right? And he wants out. That's a possible scenario, all right? I don't want to presume that he's out because they concluded he blew it. I don't want to presume that at all. And I'm curious if Boeing had stated a reason for his departure. And
Scrolling down through this. The story. I don't see any specific statement.
Yeah. I was hoping
Boeing's website.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for too. I was wondering whether there was a press release, but it probably popped up and then disappeared the same day. They want as little of this story out there as possible. That's me speculating, but I think they probably want as little of this story out as possible. Anyways. Yeah. NTSB says, oh man. Oops. What else? That's pretty much all there is to say on 737. That's pretty much it for poor Boeing segment of uncontrolled airspace this time. I had an off-field landing of the week. But see, so here's the thing. By the time people are listening to this podcast, joke or no joke, if I put it out as fast as I put it out any episode in years, it would still be old news, this particular thing I'm about to talk about, right? And that is that, and I haven't seen the news in the last hour or so, but a U.S. company is about to try and soft land a spaceship on the moon, all right? And so to me, that was an off-field landing of the week. Get it? Off-field landing of the week. Longtime listeners of this podcast will know that I, and I think Jeb as well, are kind of spaceflight fans, and we follow the stuff with some fascination. And so U.S. soft landing, basically a robotic craft on the moon. Pretty cool. And it's supposed to happen If it's still on schedule, it's supposed to happen about a half an hour from right now. And once we get stop recording, I'm gonna open up a browser.
I'm looking at a live, quote unquote, live updates page on CNN.
Yeah,
and they're saying 6:24 p.m. Eastern time today.
Okay, so that's delayed by about an hour.
From the latest update. Yeah, probably one orbit.
Another orbit or something like that.
There's one thing we have not talked about, though.
Yeah.
That you just jogged my memory on. And that is a little helicopter that could.
I know. I think we did talk about it last episode.
Did we talk about that?
I'm pretty sure we did. Okay. If we didn't, the saddest point, there was an image that Perseverance, I believe, is the rover. Took when the time came for it to finally leave the area where Ingenuity had finally landed, and it just showed Ingenuity sitting on the sand dunes, you know, all by itself, you know, and that's so sad. It's so sad. There's a documentary about Opportunity, another one of the rovers. I haven't watched this because I don't know why. I feel like it's going to make me really sad. People have talked about it like making them cry, all right? Because Opportunity was a rover that apparently, it reached the end of its life, all right? It went above and beyond, and it did more than it was ever expected to do, but these things don't last forever. And Opportunity, eventually shut down and was left to the conditions or whatever on Mars. And the same thing's happening in Ingenuity, and it's happened to all these things. And maybe one day humans will go and recover these things and put them in museums, but I don't know.
I'm optimistic that will happen.
Yeah, but I believe they're nicknamed it Odie. I think it's Odyssey or Odysseus or something like that. Robot
according
craft.
According to the CNN story, you're right.
Yeah, that's hopefully this afternoon, in the next hour or so, a couple hours, going to land on the moon, and very, very cool. Very, very cool. That's our off-field landing of the week.
Yes.
Best I could do.
That's as good as good as anything. We have one other thing here on the list, and that's an email. Wasn't there an email?
There was. I kind of took it off. You want to talk about it?
If you took it off, there's a reason.
It's an email. Hang on, where'd it go? I'm not going to. So it's an email from listener Alex T. It's been on our list for a long time. Alex, if you're out there, sorry we haven't gotten to you, but we haven't forgotten you. Alex T. sent us this email when I had been soliciting questions. You and I were going to do an Ask Me Anything episode. All right. We were going to answer questions from listeners. And we haven't done that yet. And this has been on the list, and I just keep renewing it on the list because eventually we'll get to it. And so that's why I keep pushing it off the list. It's still there. And while on the subject, we are looking for questions. Send us questions. Looks like I'm going to be visiting you sometime in the next couple weeks or so.
Yes,
and alert the authorities, and B, we're going to record at least one episode of the podcast while I'm down there, and maybe we'll get around to doing this Ask Me Anything, you know, questions from listeners episode while I'm down there.
Good plan, actually.
Yeah. So send us questions. Send us your questions about any aviation stories that you want us to weigh in on, or non-aviation questions, you know, and we'll see what we can do. That's what Alex T's email is all about. It's in the queue. Alex, we're going to get to it, I promise. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay. All right. Fork time. It's just you and me, man. It feels weird to do the thing. That's Jeb. He's a great guy. He's the editor-in-chief of Aviation Safety Magazine, and he does other stuff.
You can find me on the internet.
Yeah, it's and just search Aviation Safety Magazine on DuckDuckGo or whatever your search engine of choice is, and you'll find Jeb and his magazine. And I'm Jack Hodgson, likewise. That'll probably do it for today. Thank you for supporting. I have a script that I read from here. I'm making it up as I go along here. Thank you for your help with the podcast. If you want to help us, you can go to patreon.com/uncontrolledairspace, or you can send us something by way of PayPal, and you can send those questions to podcast@uncontrolledairspace.com. I think that's about everything I have. Jeb, was there some word of wisdom that you were going to share with us?
I was going to simply suggest to those of us who are always looking for the next big thing that a fool and his money are soon flying more aircraft than they can handle.
Yep. All right, Wayward Aviators, that's enough talking. Let's go flying.
Ta-ta for now.